And I was said to them, I go, we've got to meet like 3-4 times a day. Okay. Right. I love you. I love you. You're so worth, you know, let me just completely protect you and love you. And,
right.
You know, yeah. And just it is important to have that exchange with another human being on a regular basis.
That's right. And in a moment, I'll talk about a couple of exercises to do that.
Thank you.
To make it more regular. Any other questions or comments? In the back, please.
It felt like compassion and action. Mm-hmm. It felt like we were taking, you know, the exercises that we'd done individually, and that I felt, you know, a lot of different things cultivating in myself when I was doing those along with the group. And then it was like bringing it to a live space, to mm-hmm. interacting with yourself and then also interacting with others. So I liked that internal time to really focus on myself, and then
right.
that time to bring it sort of to the mix of other mm-hmm. human beings.
Right. So self-compassion does open us out to common humanity again, both as a support and resource for ourselves, but as wanting to help alleviate the suffering of other people. And they're learning when they have people do compassion practice in an fMRI scanner, so it's real live, real time. The sensory motor cortex lights up as well, so that we're moved to act, we're moved to move when we're practicing compassion. Other questions? Okay, I'm going to go through a teaching part kind of quickly here because I want to have time for one last big exercise before the break for lunch. So there is a negativity bias in the human brain. It's there from evolution. We're hardwired to pay more attention to and remember better negative and intense experiences than we are positive and subtle ones. That is how we survive. As individuals and as a species, we're never not going to have that. But that means that the brain kind of leans toward a tendency to avoid experience. We tend to get in a more protective mode. Positive emotions will activate that left shift so that we open the brain out again to being more open to learning, to engaging with experience, to being curious, and to growth and change. And so the positive psychology movement has paralleled the neuroscience movement. They're both about 20 years of research. And the positive psychology movement studies things like gratitude, awe, generosity, compassion, delight, serenity, love, etc. Compassion is one of the most researched and one of the most documented. So the benefits of positive emotions in general, when people have a daily gratitude practice, compassion practice, generosity practice, whatever it is, they will experience less stress and less anxiety, less depression, and less loneliness. Over time, there's more friendships, more social support, and more collaboration within those friendships. We're more able to shift our perspective, so people tend to become more optimistic. People will become more creative and productive. They'll have better health, in that positive emotion practices are a great buffer against heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. We'll get better sleep and live on average 7 to 9 years longer. They've also found that resilience is a direct outcome of a positive emotion practice, so we get more resilient in coping with the stresses of life. The benefits of a self-compassion practice, they're discovering, we actually have increased motivation, that self-compassion is a better motivator than being critical or judgmental, so that we're more likely to put in effort to learn and grow when we are kind to ourselves. There's less fear of failure. When we're compassionate toward ourselves, we turn down the volume on the inner critic. So there's less fear of failure, and we're more likely to try things again if we have failed. Because there's less fear of failure, we're more able to take responsibility for making mistakes. So it's easier to engage in apology and forgiveness. There's more resilience in coping with life stressors, less depression, anxiety, stress and avoidance, healthier relationships in the sense that there's more support and more engagement, less control and less aggression. And there's a sense of increased social connectedness, life satisfaction and happiness. So it isn't just that we feel better in the moment or that we're even developing better patterns over time. It actually does become a way of being that has great benefit to our lives. So one of the ways that we can cultivate this self-compassion, and I actually learned this from James Barras, is to be able to imagine, and I'm going to ask you to do this just briefly, just quickly here. Go inside and imagine sitting across from someone that you know loves you unconditionally. They are so delighted that you're on the planet and in their lives. And you can look at them and see coming from them joy, delight, happiness in their relationship with you. So you really let yourself take that in for a moment, or you can experiment taking that in for a moment. Just feeling their acceptance and love of you, what that feels like in your body. Then you imagine trading places with them, so you are sitting as them looking at you. And you can feel as they feel the love and joy and delight in yourself. You can feel why they're so happy to know you, why they love you so deeply. And let yourself feel that love for yourself. And then you imagine being yourself again, looking at them, again seeing the love and affection and appreciation that they have for you. And take that in and savor that for a moment. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So any comments or questions about that one?
Invigorating,
yes. It can be a very gentle, sweet way of coming to more self-acceptance for ourselves. Then we can use that to create a circle of support. So when we're talking about let's meet three times a day, when you can remember or imagine people who have been supportive of you and who've had your back, and whether that's now or in the past or even in your imagination, and imagine them gathered around you or behind you, and they lend you their faith in you and your strength in coping. You can imagine that circle of support being present with you as you face any difficult people or situations. And that's a resource of compassion for yourself that allows you then to be more open and compassionate with other people. When we do these exercises, it's very important to be able to take in the good of them. And this is a practice taught by Rick Hansen, who's teaching up the hill at the moment on the retreat. When something good happens, we could have 20 good things happen in a day, and we'll remember the one dirty look we got from our partner at dinner. So it's important to notice and remember positive moments or remember them from the past and use them as a resource. You locate the felt sense of that goodness in your body and you let your brain absorb it for 10 to 20 to 30 seconds. That's enough to create a long-term memory in your memory system. But otherwise, these good moments can just kind of wash through our memory like water through a sieve. So if you do a practice of taking in the good, for it takes about 30 seconds to do that, and you do it 6 times a day. That's 3 moments of practice, and it's little and often, little and often. It will build that as a resource in your own long-term memory. It's a way we can be kind to ourselves and nourishing to ourselves. I'm going to tell the story about this one first. And this is a story that I first heard here from Jack Kornfield. And it's been around for a while. It's been on the internet, so you may have heard it as well. But there was a 5th grade classroom teacher whose students were being very disruptive one day. They were talking and walking around throwing spitwads. And she just had enough, and she said, "Stop. Everyone take out a piece of paper." So they did. Left-hand column of the paper, write down the name of every student in this class. In the right-hand column, write down one positive, appreciative comment about that student. So they all did that. And at the end of the class, she took all the pieces of paper, took them home, cut and pasted them, and the next morning brought back one piece of paper for each student with their 23 comments. And the students were a little bit stunned because some of them had no idea that people thought well of them in that way. 10 years later, one of the students was killed in the war in Vietnam. And at the memorial service, after the memorial service, the father came up to the teacher and pulled out a piece of paper and said they found this in the pocket of his uniform the day he was shot. And then another student came up and pulled her piece of paper out and said, I've carried this in my purse every day for 10 years. So we all need to have a sense of being resourced and cared about and supported so that we can meet the pain and suffering that's inevitable in the human condition. I told this story at a workshop recently, and someone came up to me at a break and said that one year when she was young, they were growing up, didn't have a lot of money, and mother said, there won't be any presents this year, but write down something kind or nice about every person in the family. And so they did that. That was their Christmas exchange that year. And she said that was the first time she ever knew for sure that her brother loved her. So this exercise is now done in elementary schools all around the country. And Barbara Fredrickson, who wrote the book Positivity, has turned it into an exercise called the Positivity Portfolio. And what you do is ask 10 friends to send you a card or an email. And if you're shy about doing that, then birthday times or Christmas times are a way of gathering those kind of comments. But you ask people to express their appreciation of you, what they like about you or why they like being in relationship with you. And you assemble those 10 comments on a piece of paper. You can tape it to your computer monitor or the bathroom mirror or carry it around with you. But you read it 3 times a day for 30 days. It will rewire your sense of yourself, okay, in a very, very positive way. So this is a way of being proactively compassionate about ourselves so that we feel resourced and can move more wisely in the world. Now, where are we going next? There's so many things I want to cover. You all have heard this poem before, The Guest House by Rumi. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness come as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So one of the things that's important about practicing self-compassion is self-compassion for all the parts of ourselves that we don't like so very much. And we all have those parts that we wish weren't true, but we know they are true. And so to have compassion for them is part of our self-compassion practice. And I'm simply going to describe an exercise. We're not going to do it. But Virginia Satir developed an exercise to help people come to more self-acceptance and self-esteem about themselves. And it's when you can evoke your own wiser self or the compassionate friend. And that wiser self or compassionate friend welcomes to the party characters. You imagine different characters that embody positive qualities about yourself, like loyalty or generosity or patience, and the negative qualities about yourself that you don't like so very much. You may consider yourself lazy or an angry person. And these parts are welcomed with curiosity and acceptance of the message that each one of them has. What's your gift to me? Why are you important to me in your life? And then they are all honored as part of our inner committee or our inner family because they're all there every time we make a decision or respond to a life event. So it's important to cultivate proactively. If we had a weekend, we'd be doing more exercises on having compassion for those parts of ourselves. I'm going to take us through one last exercise of reconditioning because it's really important that we learn how to and feel competent at rewiring those parts of ourselves or memories of ourselves that we're not so comfortable with. So when we're setting ourselves up to do reconditioning, we bring our awareness to the present moment. We are conscious, we are engaged. And we resource ourselves with a sense of acceptance and goodness. So we're creating kind of a neural sandwich where there's a sense of positive, and then we bring up the negative, and then we have more positive. You start with a very small negative memory, a little one. You light up the network of that entire memory, body sensations, emotions, thoughts, visual images. Then when you can evoke a positive memory that disconfirms or contradicts that negative memory, and hold them in simultaneous dual awareness. That's not always easy. It takes practice, but you can go back and forth, toggling back and forth. You always refresh and strengthen the positive, and you let go of the negative. You can touch into the negative again, and you let go of it. That will rewire the negative experience, and you can reflect and rest and savor on that change. So I'm going to lead you through an exercise to do that, and then we can have questions, and then we'll go to lunch. And yeah, so again, letting yourself sit quietly, comfortably, going inward. Noticing being in your body and your body breathing. You can ground in your body, feeling your feet on the floor, your seat on the cushion. And if you wish, you can place a hand on your heart or any place where it's comfortable and soothing to remind yourself to be loving and kind toward yourself. And you evoke as much as possible a sense of your own goodness, your own worthiness, your own intentions to be kind and loving toward yourself. And then remember one moment, one event, where an interaction between you and another person went awry, and you wound up feeling not so very good about yourself. And remember this in as much detail as you can, where you were, how old you were, who you were with, what you said, what they said, what you did, what they did. And let yourself remember the feeling of that moment, either then or now as you remember it. And notice where you feel the feelings in your body. If there's any tightness or constriction or uneasiness anywhere in your body. So you've lit up all the networks of this memory. It's vivid to you. And now you begin to imagine a different outcome, a different resolution to this scenario, even if that could not have happened in real life. But you imagine something you could have said differently. Or something the other person could have said differently, even if that never could have happened. You remember yourself doing something differently. Or the other person doing something differently. You can even imagine someone who wasn't there at the time coming in and doing something helpful. So you let yourself have a sense of this new wished-for outcome. Things simply went better and came to a more satisfactory resolution. And let that be real to you. Let yourself have a sense of it, a feeling of it, a felt sense in your body of what this new resolution would feel like to you. And then briefly recall the original event. And now you hold both the new outcome and the original event in your awareness at the same time, if you can. Or go back and forth between the positive and then the negative. And then the positive. Always refreshing and making sure that the new outcome, the new positive, is stronger. And then temporarily let go of the original negative and just remember the new positive, getting the feeling sense of it. And then bring up the negative again and notice if there's any shift. Let go of the negative again and just rest in the positive, the new outcome, and the feeling of that new resolution. Take a moment to reflect on your sense of self and how that might have shifted from an exercise like this. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So any questions, comments, reflections? Sean will be coming in here in a moment to make some announcements before we go to lunch, but we have a few minutes for questions. Yes, Natalie.
I just have a question on the Rumi quote before where you said you welcome everything mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. and the gift that it gives. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what the gift is of judgment? How is that distinct than discernment, I guess? So I can, yeah.
Right. So I think there is a difference between discernment and judgment. And if I were to have a conversation with my inner judge, and I might ask it, so what's the deal? I mean, why are you around all the time? And I might be hearing, but I care about you, I'm trying to protect you. Sometimes you're not thinking. Sometimes you do things that are goofy. I'm just trying to make sure you don't get hurt. And I might have a conversation with that inner judge about the job it's done all my life, trying to keep me safe. And then I may be able to say, thank you, I appreciate your good service. I'm going to try something different, but I'm not going to forget you. And anytime you really need it, I know you'll be there for me. I would just have that conversation, which is different than discerning, which is understanding that some things are more skillful than others, and I'm going to try to choose what's more wholesome. Yeah. Okay. Other questions or comments?
This was an amazing exercise. Mm-hmm. I had a bad experience, bad memory. Mm-hmm. And when I recall that memory, my body felt from my mouth to down in the chest mm-hmm. that it was choked with some concrete, that what you described, the concrete type material. Mm-hmm. And intellectually, I have resolved that issue, but my body still remembered. And when I went to the positive thing, that concrete started dissolving. Mm-hmm. And finally, there was no concrete there.
Right.
It felt very open mm-hmm. and light.
Right.
So my body was still remembering the bad thing that mm-hmm. happened. So thank you.
I'm glad that you spoke to that. This is the technique that underlies all trauma therapy, and I've done EMDR, trauma therapy, for 16, 17 years now. And what happens is it does not rewrite history, but it changes our relationship to what happened. It doesn't change what happened, it just changes our sense of ourself. And I've often had the experience, you go through a reconditioning exercise like this, the EMDR, and people are dealing with very difficult traumas that they've held for a long time. And they come out of a session and they go, well, what was I so upset about? Because it's gone. It's gone from the neural circuitry. Very powerful. So I'm glad that we have a very safe, benevolent way, actually, of experiencing it here. Other, yes, please. And wait for the mic.
Yeah, I had an amazing experience. I was resistant.
Hold it close.
I was resistant to doing this exercise. Didn't relate to it. And I just thought, well, I'll just give it a try. And I came up with a memory that's a pretty old one that kind of is a seminal memory for me, mm-hmm. Where I go right to the feeling, even though I was very young mm-hmm. at the time. So I just went with this. And I actually, luckily with my mother, had kind of a very wonderful change toward the end of her life mm-hmm. where there was the contrasting feeling. And so I just went with this. And so then, now, when I can go back to the image that I mm-hmm. have, instead of having the feeling, what I had was compassion.
Absolutely. Right. So you're speaking to how powerful this is, and it is important when we do this that the new contradicts or disconfirms the old. It's just a direct juxtaposition. That's what causes the neurons to fall apart and rewire. So when we can come up with something like the positive experience, perhaps with your mother at the end of her life, and then you have that as a resource, and you can use it to make that happen in your brain. Yeah. Yes, please. Up here. And maybe this will be the last one.
Is it perhaps more powerful to take, if you can in your life, specific moments where they juxtaposition instead of imagining that same instance turning out differently? Maybe there's another instance that you can use that completely...
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Is that more powerful even than imagining something?
If there is a real event that's a contradiction, yes, that probably would be more powerful. Yeah, because you have a different body memory of it. So thank you all for your attention this morning. I think what I'm going to do after Sean makes the announcements is go to lunch, but I will come back. We come back at 1:30 for the next session. I'll come back at 1:15. So if people have questions, then we can do that a little bit before lunch. So, Sean.
Thank you, Linda. Powerful work, eh? I think this slide alone is worth so much. It has so much value. Thank you so much. I'm delighted in all these exercises and all the teachings behind it. So before we go to lunch, just like to share that if you did not bring your lunch and you're not sure what to do, there are local delis and restaurants. There's flyers in the foyer with directions to local food. Volunteers, if you could check in with me around 1:10 or 1:15, I would really appreciate that. We have a few things that we need to get done. I don't know if Linda mentioned this, but we have her books for sale on the back table. They're $16 each, including tax and discount, so we'll have volunteers back there to assist with any purchases if you wish. Also, our bookstore has a 20% off sale on just about everything. If you pay by cash or check, there's a lot of stuff in there with 50% off discount stickers. If you have any questions, let me know. And I'd like to remind you that the upper retreat area is off limits for us today. Tomorrow afternoon, if you want to stop by and see the area, you're more than welcome to do so. The retreat ends tomorrow at 11. And I just really like to pause and express gratitude for Linda for being here. Thank you. I'd like to share that Linda is here out of her own generosity. She's not getting paid a dime for being here. So I'd like to delight in your generosity. And a lot of you already know this, but we, our teachers teach here freely and are supported by the community. So your class fee today goes to pay for the lights and the land and staff, and does not go to the teacher. And if you would like to contribute to the teacher in any way, not only financially, but even just a verbal thank you or a thank you note or some form of generosity from your heart, you're welcome to do so. There's no obligation, only if you feel compelled to donate something, then we make that available to you. There are wicker baskets in the foyer marked Dana, D-A-N-A, old Buddhist term for generosity. And 100% of everything that's put into the wicker baskets goes to Linda. If you would like to pay by check, you're welcome to do so. Please address it to Spirit Rock, and we'll just put 100% of those funds in one check to Linda. There's credit card forms in the bottom of the baskets, and cash is fine, and thank you notes and chocolate bars and everything else is okay too. So if anyone has any questions, please let me know about Spirit Rock or Donna or how teachers are supported. I'm happy to talk. And we'll ring the bell outside at 1:20 just to alert people that we're 10 minutes away from coming back in. And I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.